We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning.
The state Senate won praise for how it voted on same-sex marriage in April. It was done with a lot of publicity. It was not late at night. But as we know, a lot of bills get passed at the very end of the legislative session, including major issues like this session, the restructuring of the State Economic Development Corporation. Why does the General Assembly have such a hard time taking on the significant issues earlier in the legislative session?
We were working on these things all session, and I think Speaker Fox would say, as I would say, we ended the session this year at about 10:30 at night the last night. It was actually one of, I think, our better endings. So it's something I'm very proud of, the way that we concluded the session. The members weren't necessarily happy they were there till July 3rd, but we did address the concerns that people have expressed with regard to the perception of staying there so late at night. That being said, we are no different than any other entity. We pass a number of the bills early on. However, some people aren't willing to compromise on the more difficult bills till the end. So everybody knows what the issues are. But until people realize there's either going to be no bill unless they compromise, then they're not willing to compromise. And that's oftentimes the only real reason why things wait till the end. It's like a case settling the night before trial. It just doesn't happen till people realize the gavel's going to bang for the last time.
One of those frittatas at the end of the legislative session with your friends in the House of Representatives was the issue of tolls on the Saconnet River Bridge. I'm sure this is an issue you follow very closely as resident of Newport. What do you think the state should do in terms of funding bridge maintenance? Should people in Woonsocket and Westerly have to pay for the upkeep of bridges in the East Bay?
I think that we all need to pay for infrastructure throughout the state. And historically, we have relied on the gas tax. The gas tax is going away. Everybody's driving Priuses. I'm not, but everybody's conserving energy. So we need to have a real discussion about funding all of the bridges in our state. In the same way the people in East Bay need to be responsible for the bridges in Woonsocket, the people in Woonsocket need to be responsible for East Bay. How do you do that? Do you look at car registrations? Do you look at an additional gas tax? Do you look at inspection fees? And do you look at tolls in different places? Every state in the country is looking at this issue. So my answer is we should all be responsible for our infrastructure. And it's not about us. It's not about you, Ian, or Scott, or me. It's about grandchildren. It's about future generations. The Saconnet River Bridge is a classic example because it's only 10 years difference in age between that and the Newport Bridge. Yet we had to spend over $150 million to build a new bridge that wasn't maintained as compared to the Newport Bridge and perhaps more strikingly the Mount Hope Bridge, which has been maintained by designated fees through a toll.
Let's go to Scott.
The 38 Studios fiasco. Do we pay the bonds or walk away?
I think that we're all in agreement, and the governor perhaps most of all, that no one wants to have to pay the bond. And that really was the critical issue, that the opinions from those that know, and I don't pretend to know, but whether it was Rosemary Gologly or Richard Leach or Peter Marino and all the fiscal people, the general treasurer, was that failure to meet our moral obligation would have devastating repercussions for the state. That being said, I fully believe when the governor says he will pursue every avenue to secure alternative funding, whether it's through insurance or litigation, in order to not have that debt fully go back to the taxpayers.
Can you envision a situation in which you would support restoring the State Ethics Commission's ability to police legislative behavior?
I absolutely do. I think that the critical issue is separation of powers. As you know, the Ethics Commission was created before separation of powers passed. Accordingly, we have an Ethics Commission that's appointed by the governor, albeit by some list by the General Assembly, that has regulatory powers, and it needs to be examined as to how we do that. Could we do it statutorily? Could we do it by revising the regulatory power of the Ethics Commission? Or do we do it by eliminating the speech and debate clause? When we adopted separation of powers under the leadership of Common Cause, we were looking to the federal model. As you well know, the United States Constitution has a speech and debate clause. Eliminating the speech and debate clause, in my mind, is like killing an ant with a mallet. I think that absolutely we need to fall under the Ethics Commission. The question is, how does that happen?
At the same time, we've been hearing that. We've talked about this a couple of years ago. We're not any farther along to resolving this issue. Where is the answer in resolving this impasse?
You know, it may be in a constitutional convention, in a broader discussion.
Do you support organizing a constitutional convention?
Well, as I think John Marion said on your show last week, there's dangers and pluses with constitutional conventions. I think if we had a constitutional convention, we'd see a coupling of the lieutenant governor or an elimination of the lieutenant governor position. I think we'd have a broader discussion about the Ethics Commission, and there's probably any other number of issues out there that I'm not thinking of that would come up for discussion. Do we need a full-time General Assembly, or are we satisfied with a part-time General Assembly? Which leads you directly to the issues surrounding the issues that are articulated by the Irons case.
So do you support organizing a constitutional convention or not?
I don't know about my fellow members, but on a personal level, I would support a constitutional convention. I don't want to say that I've asked my fellow members. Under the Constitution, the first step is for us to appoint a bipartisan commission. If we don't do that, then I believe the governor does it. And one way or another, I anticipate the question will go to the voters in 2014. I believe if we fail to act, then it automatically is placed on the ballot by the Secretary of State.
We're talking with Senate President Teresa Pivo-Whedon. Let's go back to Scott.
We have some changes coming in health care, particularly the health care exchange, the so-called local version of Obamacare. What do you think of that, how that's been running so far, and what kind of legislative oversight do you plan?
I, like everyone else, have some concerns about the healthcare exchange. Let me just backtrack. I'm probably the odd man out on this. I would have liked to have seen single payer. So I had my skepticism going into the conversation about the healthcare exchange. And that may be because I'm from Newport, where I have many retired veterans and federal employees who are actually single payer for all extent and purposes now. There has been incredible investment in the exchange by the federal government. I am cautiously optimistic it will work. My concerns that I have come from the fact that I believe so strongly in right care, and we have done such a good job with right care. I'm happy Christie's in charge of the exchange because I'm hopeful that with her in charge, we're not going to see right care devolve. And that's a little bit of what I'm perhaps most concerned about. At this point, I think it's a wait and see on the exchange. I have confidence in the Chafee administration and in the selection of Christy Ferguson. I'm not convinced yet that these exchanges make a lot of sense, particularly for a state the size of Rhode Island. And I'm concerned about the cost. It seems like everybody's talking about access, and nobody's talking about affordability. And one thing that came when we talked about shifting this year, folks, to the exchange from right care, was right away the increase in premiums. And would the subsidies be sufficient? And would we start losing moms because if we didn't protect children? It was in terms of a discussion that took place at the end that concerned me. If I could name one discussion that really concerned me at the end of session, that was it in the context of the budget, because there's so many unknowns. We don't know what's going to happen as we shift so many of these folks to this exchange.
I'd like to ask you about your political future. Do you plan to seek another term as Senate president?
I do, as long as I have the sense that the members of the chamber would bestow that honor upon me. I do. I have. I really am committed to the General Assembly, and I feel that it's a great honor that I have.
Three Democrats, it looks like, are lining up to run for governor next year. And just wondering, are you with Governor Chafee, General Treasurer Raimondo, or Providence Mayor Angel Taveras? Which
I will definitely be with
today,
the Democrat.
If you had to vote,
we're shocked.
If you had to cast your primary vote today, which of those three candidates would you vote for?
And do you feel any particular affinity with Gina Raimondo? We've never had a female governor. You're obviously the first female Senate president in Rhode Island. So do you feel any particular inclination to support her?
As you know, in my position, I work with all three of these individuals, and it would be premature for me to say anything about any one of them.
We had to ask.
I know you had to ask. And I have tremendous respect for Gina. I worked very closely with her on pension reform. I have worked very closely with Governor Chafee on many of these these economic development issues as well as any other number of issues. He is now the incumbent Democratic governor. And I think Mayor Tavares has done a terrific job leading the city of Providence, and I do have confidence in him.
We're out of time, so we have to leave it there. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Thank you.
And the president of the Rhode Island Senate, Teresa Pivoweed.
Thank you.